name is Neil Middleton, and every month we create informative content for you as we talk to important, influential, and inspirational people from the world of bats, as well as other areas of interest. To find out more about Batability, go to batability.co.uk. Now for the interview. Let's do it. Welcome, welcome, welcome. In fact, this is an ultra welcome. So I'm going to add an extra welcome to Anne Youngman. The creaky old bat. I always cringe in my trainers when I say that because I know for a fact there is nothing creaky or old about Anne Youngman. It's her choice of phraseology, not mine. How are you doing today, Anne?
Good morning, Neil. I'm fine. And I do feel a bit creaky some days. And to be honest, I'm going for the sympathy vote.
Well, you had my sympathy up until about 2 seconds ago. Right, now, now that has evaporated. Oh, Anne, I was just saying to you before we started the recording, I cannot believe that it is almost 2 years to the day since you and I last spoke. It kind of feels like 6 months ago. And when we last spoke, you were about to do your first marathon. You had done your couch to 5K and you were leading up to the first marathon. I'm going to ask you in a few moments about that before we get into what you're about to do next, which is slightly more complicated for a few reasons. So I'm just going to very quickly introduce Anne to you all. Well known within the bat world as the Bat Conservation Trust's Scottish Bat Officer, 2003 to 2017. I actually remember the day when it was announced that Anne got that job in 2003. Didn't know Anne back then, but I very quickly got to know Anne shortly after that. Lots of things that she's achieved in her life so far, including Nature of Scotland Lifetime Achievement Award winner 2017. And as I already alluded to, Couch to 5K to Marathon Runner 2021. Anne, how did that marathon go for you?
It was brilliant. It went really, really well. But I had designed my course in a way to make sure I'd be successful, and I'd chosen the flattest course I could possibly find, which, as you know, was along the canals between Edinburgh and Glasgow. And also knew then I wasn't going to have to worry about cars and traffic. And of course, with the Bat ML project on the canal, there were lots of lovely, positive batty associations with the route. So everywhere I was running, I was thinking, yeah, remember this night we were catching Dorbentons here, and oh yeah, this is brilliant habitat for bats. So the whole thing went really well. The one thing that I got wrong at the end, and I really regret this, I had cycled the route to measure the distance with my Garmin. But then when I actually jogged the route, the distances didn't quite match up with what I was hearing on my headphones. And I'd initially planned to run all the way around the Kelpies with quite a spectacular ending and then finish. And I'd told friends about this. But as I came towards the end, you know, about a mile and a half before I got to the Kelpies, I'd done my marathon. So I was like, but well, just keep jogging on, you know. And I got closer and closer to the end. And I thought, well, shall I do round the Kelpies or not? And I thought, well, I've already done it. So I didn't. But, and this is my regret, some friends were there and they brought their children to wait by the Kelpies to run the last little bit with me. And then suddenly they saw me finishing earlier, you know, diverting off. So I really feel bad about that. I should have just done round the Kelpies. But my mind wasn't really sort of working properly by that time.
Wow. So technically speaking, I think the definition of what you're about to do, which is an ultra marathon, I think the definition of an ultra marathon is anything that exceeds marathon distance. Am I correct with that?
Yeah. You're right. So I've been telling lies. This is not my first ultra marathon at all.
I'm sorry. Just forget the whole thing, folks. It's all off. She doesn't have to do it anymore.
I think my island a bit doesn't really count in that one. I'm not counting it.
Let's just say that day you did a marathon. Okay, and then after you did the marathon, you went out for another mile and a half jog. Something like that. Right, Anne, what has possessed you? 45 miles. Right, folks, I'm going to say a few things here before Anne tells us a bit more about it. 45 miles. This is not going to be flat. This is not going to be easy. And you're doing it overnight as well.
Yep.
Along an awful lot of terrain where there is not going to be any artificial light.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me all about this. What are you doing? We'll talk about why you're doing it later on, but what are you doing?
Okay. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. So 10 o'clock on Friday night, which just happens to coincide with sunset, which I think is perfect. We start off from Melrose Abbey. So I'll be saying a little prayer. And then we just gently jog. So it's left foot, right foot, continue for 45 miles. I'll go through some brilliant bat habitats. So there's some lovely bits near the River Tweed, which I'm really going to enjoy because they're nice and flat. There's some really hilly bits, which I'm not going to enjoy quite so much, I don't think. The worst bit, or the most exciting dramatic bit you've got in your picture there, will be Wide Open. I think that's a climb of about 1,700 and something feet. So it's a long, long, long slog. But to keep my brain sort of positive, I'm going to imagine Julie Andrews at the top singing "The Hills Are Alive," just anything silly to keep me going. And like you said, we start off at sunset, so I'll be gently jogging through the night, through the dawn. I've got my little bat detector, my little audio moth, which fits just nicely around the strap of my backpack. So hopefully I'll be picking up some exciting bat calls as I jog along. And then, eventually I hope to reach Wooler, which is my hometown, and that's where my mum still is. So that seems a perfect place for me to finish, to collapse.
Wow. Okay. I hadn't appreciated that. I mean, I knew you were from the north of England, but I hadn't appreciated that connection there. Wow. That's really nice. Yeah. Right. So you're saying "we" quite a few times when you're describing this. So you're not going to be on your own, yeah?
Oh, well, there'll be about, I think there's up to 150 other people doing it. I'll be right at the back. But I don't know anybody else doing it. You know, it's not as if I'm like part of a team or anything. So,
okay. So this is wasn't obvious, but this is a big event that's...
Yeah. So it's an organised event. It's not like the London one I did where it was a virtual one where I got to choose my own route. This one, the route's already chosen.
And it just coincidentally ends in your hometown.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying that. Okay. I'm going to stop at Wooler. The really, really fit people, right, continue another 15 miles and go all the way to Lindisfarne. So you've two options on the route. You can do the softies route or you can do the super toughies route. I thought I'll do the softies to start off with.
So they're going to go all the way to Lindisfarne. But I'm assuming quite a few people will stop at Wooler, will they? Or are different people might stop at different points? Is that kind of how it works? Or
I think people stop at different points when they give up, Neil. The official end points are Wooler and Lindisfarne.
Okay. Wow. That's just it's a lot of words come to mind here, Anne. Okay. As you know, I do a bit of running. Okay.
Yes.
I've never done a marathon. All right. The longest I run these days is about 5 miles. I was never a fan of hill running. So even if this had just been a 5 mile route, I couldn't see me doing it. This is going to be pretty spectacular. Is it You're gonna obviously, like, I'm not thinking of health and safety point of view, okay? Believe it or not. You're gonna have a few head torches with you in case you run out of batteries and stuff like this, yeah.
I have my head torch and I'll have a spare as well. I did have an experience a couple of nights ago where I went out up this glen through the woods, and I got all the way up, which is about a mile and a half, and I got about a third of the way down and my head torch just conked out.
Okay.
So there I was in the dark thinking, oh, flip. So I had to echolocate my way home.
Yeah.
It was all right.
And joking apart, that's not funny. But that, I mean, I run a lot on things like canal towpaths and stuff like that, probably part of the route that you did for your marathon. And I think it was last year, I went out round about dusk, thinking that I had plenty of time to do my run before it got too dark, and I didn't take a head torch with me. And even on a canal towpath, when you know the ground in front of you is flat, when you can't actually see where your individual feet are going, that's not nice.
No, it's not. Yeah. That I think that's probably one of my biggest fears, is the running in the dark, which I have been practicing, but I took a tumble about the night before, not really badly, but it was just a sort of a reminder that this can happen. Yeah. So in the dark, and then I'm really praying, I know this sounds ungrateful, but that the weather cools down a bit, because the heat is exhausting trying to run through the day in these temperatures.
Yeah. So how are you going to keep hydrated? Do you have to take all of your hydration with you, or do they have like points where you can top up, stuff like this?
It'll be both, Neil. So I've got my wee backpack.
Okay.
Has a bladder inside it. And so I have just my little tube, you know, so it's just a little sip of water every so often. And then there are four aid stations along the way. So running's good for your brain as well, because I've been doing so much maths these last few days. Like, how, you know, like things like, how many energy gels do I need? What will they weigh? What's the difference between carrying one of the sort of compressed fruit and nut bars compared to an energy gel in terms of like little smallest amount of weight for most calories?
Yeah.
Things like that, and working out how much water I need. So yeah, I'll be carrying water with me, but I'll have to top up along the way as well.
Okay. And I suppose this is what you are now doing in terms of how it's normally done by, let's just say, the people that do this all of the time. A lot of it is about those sort of things that you're talking about. You know, the weight of your shoes, the style of the shoes, the weight of your rucksack. All of this must just go into a normal ultra marathon runner's thought process. Yeah.
You can get a little bit obsessive about these things.
Not that you're obsessed at all about it, though.
If I'm not actually out running, I'm watching videos of other people running in the hope I'll pick like one or two really good tips. I find myself gravitating towards people who've done these things in the hope that somehow good luck will wave off from them and attach itself to me.
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. And I can think of lots of songs that you might sing to yourself along the way. If you're enjoying listening to our podcasts, perhaps you would also be interested in joining Batability Club. To find out more about Club, which includes hundreds of hours of accessible training resources available to you in your own time and at your pace, go to batability.co.uk. Thank you. Well, that's the point, though. Are you going to maybe have music playing through headphones or anything like this? Or are you just going to enjoy just the sounds and the atmosphere of when you're running? Or is it a bit of both? Have you thought about that at all?
No, it'll be the latter. I don't usually run with headphones in, so I'm not going to do anything different to my normal practicing. I just quite like listening to sort of like the birds singing, the sheep bleating, all that sort of thing. And if I need music, I just make it up. I just sing to myself. I'm not sure if there's anybody near me, whether they really appreciate my songs.
But to be honest, and I'm like you, okay, I never have headphones on when I'm running. Part of that, I think, is because I'm a bit of a scaredy cat when I'm running. Yeah. Well, it's not so much of a scaredy cat, but I don't like surprises.
No.
And if there's a vehicle coming up behind me, or a cyclist, or another runner, or a dog barking in the distance, I kind of want to be aware of all of that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, you're trying to keep your heart rate low, aren't you, Neil? The last thing you need is some.
Yeah. But I find now, and yeah. I've started wearing hearing aids in the last kind of year or so. I don't need them badly, but they do help a little bit. But I do find now that even in normal circumstances, somebody can open a door to a room and I'll just jump out my skin. Just go, oh, where'd you come from?
story about sudden frights. I did one run. Where I set off from Wooler,
okay,
and Yetham, and I knew that I was going to end up running back in the dark, but this was part of the training thing. And yeah. Then on the way back, I was hoping for a fantastic sunrise, but it was sunset rather, but it was really, really misty, so I didn't see that. But anyway, I was running through the hills. It was about 10 o'clock at night, absolutely pitch dark with my sort of red light on my new torch. And I'm thinking, oh, aren't I brave? You know, I'm out in the Cheviot Hills all on my own, and the rain's coming down and the mist, but I'm so tough. And then suddenly the sheep, it was almost as if it heard me, went, nah. And I just thought it was laughing at me, but also the fright that it gave me. So much for thinking I was big and brave.
And the thing is, when that happens to you, you then become even more obsessed with other little things that you hear, and everything kind of gets exaggerated, doesn't it? Yeah.
I was so glad as well. I didn't see any sheep actually on the track, because I think the light from their eyes reflecting back would have been a bit spooky, but I didn't see that. But the other thing I did find, which was totally terrifying, and it sounds ridiculous, is the sudden appearance of reeds on the track.
Okay.
And I reckon it's because you're running along and you're on a grassy track and there's heather either side, and your brain just gets used to that. That's the ordinary, and it doesn't change. And then it seems like suddenly something looms out of the dark towards you, and it's just a clump of reeds, but it's different. And it just about three or four times that gave me the fright of my life. So I just thought, how ridiculous. But I'm glad I've done it, because then hopefully on the real run, I won't be scared of reeds anymore.
Yeah. But also, I mean, I also think about all of this bat work that you've done in the past, being out at night. And you know, and I know, and a lot of most bat workers out there, I think, would know, doing bat work and being out at night when sometimes you're on your own, because you may be detached from the rest of the group or other people, or sometimes you're just genuinely on your own because you're on your own. I remember when I started doing bat work, I used to be quite apprehensive on occasions about being out in the dark, but you kind of get used to it. Yeah. So that's probably been quite good psychological training for you as well. Yeah.
I think as well, I always find it's worse if I'm tired. Because then I think my imagination goes a wee bit into overdrive. And like you say, you start hearing strange noises, and then you can sort of imagine a whole story behind what this noise is, you know, and then the next noise fits in with your story. So getting plenty of rest before the marathon is going to be really important, so that my brain's kind of as calm as possible before I start.
I suppose one good thing, you kind of joked about you being right at the back.
Yeah.
I suppose the good thing about that is those people in front of you, they're kind of clearing the route for you, aren't they? You know, so if there are any sheep up ahead and stuff, you know, they'll be well out the way, you know.
I think that might be my parcel.
Oh, go for it. Yeah, go for it. So Anne's just a way to get a parcel from the...
No, it's not. It's my...
Is that the post? Okay, that's cool.
Suffering partner coming back from... He's been...
Excellent. Sounds good. Sounds good. Right. So what's your training up to? What sort of have you completed the distance yet, or is this going to be the first time you complete the distance when you do it?
It's going to be the first time. So I've in my training so far, I think the most I've run is about 31 miles.
Wow. Wow.
So I keep looking on the map, you know, and seeing where 31 miles is so that I can think, right, when I know I can do that. And you mentioned, I mean, the whole distance is 45, but I'm not thinking of it as 45. It's 15 miles, which I know I can do. It's another 15 miles, which I know I can do. And then it's another 15. Yeah. And I've run that bit of the route quite a few times. And it's funny, the more you run it, the shorter it seems to get.
Okay.
And that's because your brain has less to take in, the more familiar you are with it. So mentally, it's not so tiring.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's 15, 15 and 15 in my mind. But also that might just come down to it's one step. It's another step. It's another step. It's just one step.
Yeah, I kind of, when we started this discussion and you were kind of describing what you're doing and you kind of described it as, yeah, I'm just putting one foot in front of another. Or you said something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was. I'm thinking to myself, No. That's it. I mean, that's a really good psychological way to think about it. I mean, you've got a lot of resilience and a lot of commitment, and you've put a lot of preparation into this to get up to 31 miles. I mean, that is just astonishing. No, obviously, there's going to be bits of this that you're not going to be able to run. It's going to be like, and I'm thinking about not just the steep uphill bits, but there might be some downhill bits where it might be a bit dangerous to run as well, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, so anything pretty steep, I'm just going to be really, really sensible, as she said. I'm not going to be tempted to race away. In fact, I keep having these little mantras going through my mind, you know, stick to pace, don't race, go slow.
Yeah.
So anything really steep uphill, I'm just going to plod up. And then all the lovely gentle downhills and flat bits, I'll just be gently plodding along.
Yeah.
I think the word running, actually, you know, running probably doesn't come into it. Think gentle.
Okay. Wow. And you're doing all of this, okay, for Bats Without Borders. Okay, an excellent organization whom I know well. We've had people from Bats Without Borders on Bat Ability Club in the past, for example, and Bat Ability has previously made donations to BWB. But for people to donate for what you're doing, Anne, which is for funds that are going towards the Bats Without Borders, is that a fundraising page that's available via the Bats Without Borders website? Is that correct?
Yeah. The easiest thing for people to do is just Google or look up Bats Without Borders and get to their website. And then on the very front page, there's a little picture of me, and you can click on that picture and get to the fundraising page that way. And if they do that, then they might quite enjoy looking at the website as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've had a look on the website this morning, in particular to do with your page on the website, because they're obviously so happy that you're doing this for them that they've actually given you your own web page on their website that talks all about the ultramarathon. There's a little video about you talking about it and advertising, which is hilarious. I love the kind of storytelling way in which that video comes across. And as you said, there's links to the fundraising page. I'm assuming that fundraising page is going to be open for a good while after you've done the event. Yeah.
I don't actually set a closing date on it at all. There's no rush, but if people do want to donate, which would be really appreciated, just do it while you remember.
Absolutely. So we're going to do something really special here, Anne, because as you know, when we do Talking Bat interviews, if people such as yourself come on and they're not promoting a product or a service or something like that, we happily give money to a charity of their choice. Okay. And we've given to many charities and organisations in the past, including Bats Without Borders. But what we're going to do today, Anne, okay, is we're going to commit to £100 today, okay? But that's not all, because what's going to happen, folks, is this is an unusual talking bat interview in that we're actually doing two separate interviews and we're putting them together as one interview. So when you see this, folks, you're going to see this as one interview. But myself and Anne will have recorded it on two separate days. So at the moment, we are just short of a week away from Anne doing the ultra marathon. So it's Friday the 16th of June at the moment. And next Friday, Friday the 23rd of June, is when Anne is actually going to do the ultra marathon. And then a week after that, okay, you're not giving yourself much time for recovery here, Anne, to talk to me again. But a week after that, on Friday the 30th of June, we're going to interview Anne after she did the ultra marathon, and she's going to tell us, she's going to tell us how fabulously terrible it was, or how terribly fabulous it was, or something like that. How does that sound, Anne? I think that's what we're doing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that sounds perfectly good, yeah.
Right. So this week we're donating, or we're committing to £100 to Bats Without Borders. Continue watching the interview and see if Batability committed to actually more than £100, okay?
Oh,
after Anne does the events. So there you go. It's really, really exciting. Anne, do you want to talk a little bit about Bats Without Borders? You know, why you think they're an amazing organisation and about the work they do and stuff, yeah?
First of all, I sort of want to say, I thought a lot of people in the UK might wonder, well, why should I, you know, help a charity that's based in Southern Africa? And I really hope it's because all Batty people, or everyone who cares about nature conservation, I like to feel that we're kind of linked, even though we don't perhaps know each other, all around the world. And that when, you know, when one group needs some help, if we can, we'll do it. So that was my thinking behind, you know, why is it all right to ask people in the UK to donate to a foreign charity? I like to think we're all linked in that way.
Absolutely.
You know, bats are my thing. I just think they're so fascinating and wonderful and amazing. So it doesn't matter where you live as a bat. You know, I want you to live and thrive and have a good, healthy life. And Bats Without Borders, it's a fairly new charity. It's pretty small. And so everything they're doing now, you know, it's making a big impact. So you might give a little, but it will go a long way. And they just basically, they need all the help and support they can get. Bat conservation in Southern Africa, it's still in its very, very early days. So bats there don't have the protection that bats here in the UK have. We know what a hard time our bats here have. So, you know, in Southern Africa, they need it even more. So that's my sort of thinking, that I just really want to help.
Yeah, and, you know, I totally support what you're saying there. I think it's amazing that you're doing this. I'm not going to ask you about, at the moment, I'm not going to ask you about what's next, if anything. We're going to save that until the next bit of this interview when you come back, because I would imagine, come 2 weeks on Friday, or 2 weeks today, when is she come back to do the second part of this interview. I don't know. I'm not going to say anything, because I can't imagine what you're going to be like, because I just always see you as an enthusiastic, inspirational, motivational kind of person. I just want to, it's just going to be really interesting for you to talk about this when you come back. Yeah.
I really kind of hope that I can do it. I feel as if I've done all the training, so I should be able to. But then there's always the odd thing that can happen that goes wrong, you know, you trip and fall, or the weather is just so hot. I really want to do it, but I am old enough and wise enough to think it's better not to finish and sort of kill yourself and be able to live and do something another day.
Yeah.
But I think part as well of suggesting we have a second interview was to put that little bit of pressure on me, thinking, come on, come on. Because when next time you talk to Neil, you want to say, I did it, I did it.
and that's what we want as well. But to be honest, look, either way, I think it's absolutely amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And you've already done 31 miles. So, you know, that's got to be a huge confidence builder. So I think what we'll do, Anne, because we haven't really rehearsed how we're going to do this, okay? And we've never done this before on our Talking About interview, but I think what we're going to do, Anne, and everybody, is we're just going to stop talking right now, and in a few seconds from now, you're going to hear myself and Anne talking 2 weeks later after she's done or gone through the experience of, you know, doing the ultra marathon. So, you know, Anne, in a few moments, I'll ask you to say temporarily goodbye to our audience. Before I do that, I'm just going to say thank you for talking to me in the first half of this interview. I genuinely wish you all the very best with what you're doing. I hope that it turns out to be a really massive personal milestone and achievement for yourself, as well as all of the good reasons why you're doing it. So best of luck, and I look forward to speaking to you on the 30th of June. You say goodbye to our audience now, Anne, and that'll be us. Thank you.
Bye, Neil. It's a pleasure as always to speak to you, and I hope next time we speak, it's going to be just as fantastic.
So folks, here we are. Yeah, the second part of this Talking About interview with Anne Youngman. And as you would have heard a few moments ago, we cut the interview just about a week or so before and was due to do the ultra marathon that we've been talking about. And I'm now going to go over to Anne, where we're back. It's pretty much almost a week after the dreaded day, or the spectacular day. I'm not quite sure at the moment. Anne's going to tell me in a moment how she got on. So hold your breath, or rather take a deep breath, and here goes. How are you doing, Anne?
I'm very good.
Very good.
I do feel as if I need to build up the suspense slightly.
Yeah, because I have seen one or two social media posts that at least confirmed to me that you were still alive. Okay.
Yeah, I'm very much alive. But, you know, I feel as if I ought to have a big golden envelope to open. But instead of a big golden envelope, I have my monkey training shoe. Don't know
all
if
right,
you can
hold
see
on a second. I want to get that.
With my little batty assistant in it.
Okay.
So instead of an envelope, I have a packet of. And then if we turn it round, what have we got on the other side? Did she do it? Yes, of course. It was brilliant. It was fantastic. No problem.
No problem.
Honestly, I don't say this as a boast, but I had read so much about, you know, you'll get to a point where you really want to give up and you have to dig really deep and all your demons will come back to haunt you. So I'm jogging along thinking, well, it's still all right. You know, oh, this is fine. This is good. Yeah, this is good. And there was never a point where I thought, I'm not going to do it. I've got to give up. So I'm really, really pleased. I'm dead chuffed. Not to say that that won't happen at some point in the future, for being so smug.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, that is brilliant. So you had to do it within a certain time, yeah?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm assuming you achieved that time, yeah?
Yes. We had 17 hours to do the stretch from Melrose to Wooler. Okay. And I did it in 12 hours 22, but I'm slightly frustrated because I know I could have done it faster.
Oh, okay.
And that's for next time.
Okay, next time. Okay, we're going to talk. We're going to. I'm picking up lots of vibes here. Okay, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. Let's just stick to the session itself. What was the weather like? Yeah, was it?
Oh, it was good. It was really good. In that it had been so hot beforehand, and that was one of my big worries, was running in the heat. So we started off at 10:30. There was a bit of a delay at the start. And it was probably about 17 degrees then, so warm enough, but it was raining. And actually the rain, I quite like running in the rain. I mean, it wasn't belting down, but it was quite gentle, and there was a bit of a breeze. So that was fantastic. And then through the night, it stayed relatively, you know, cool, around about 17. And then by, I can't remember really, when I had about sort of 6 miles, probably about 9 miles, I think, to go, it started to really get sunny. So the poor people who were going all the way to Lindisfarne, they must have just absolutely cooked. So the last bit was hot and bright. I was very well prepared. I had an old silk scarf, which I dipped in a stream, draped over my head.
Excellent, excellent.
And held on my head with a visor and did my sort of Lawrence of Arabia dripping look. And it kept me cool. So I don't care what I looked like. I finished.
Okay. So were there ever moments when you were total, because you said you started at 10:30. That was 10:30 at night. But just to remind folk here. Were there points when you were totally on your own, or were you always within or next to someone? How did that go?
Yeah, you could always see someone's sort of twinkling light. And actually, when we first started, we all had to set off up this really steep hill, and it looked so pretty. It was lovely. Everyone had, like, you know, some people had blue, some had red, some had green lights, some had white lights, and they were all sort of twinkling and flashing. It looked like a lovely line of fairies going up the hill.
Brilliant.
And you said, was I ever on my own? No, you tended to sort of jog along with other people and chat to them. And I am so glad that I had walked the route, because that was really, really helpful. And I ended up as a bit of a tour guide saying, go right, watch the bridge.
Okay. Listen, folks, you might hear a fire alarm just as I'm saying that it stopped. Yeah, that fire alarm in the background, that was at the Battability end. Okay, that was the Friday morning fire alarm, which I totally forgot about. Anyway, these things. It wasn't an ambulance chasing Anne up a hill or anything like that.
No.
Okay. So another thing we spoke about, I think, a couple of weeks ago, was sheep and livestock and stuff like that, or anything. Did you have any scary encounters or?
No, it was actually surprisingly quiet, because I thought, we're running through the night, we'll probably hear owls.
Yeah.
But didn't hear anything till, I did hear owls in some places, but, you know, not very much. And then it got to about 2:45, and then the dawn chorus started. And so that was lovely. That was really beautiful. But no, I didn't have any sheep suddenly sort of springing out behind me and giving me heart failure. There was nothing like that. There was one incident, not really, but not an incident, but we're running alongside a river, and I mentioned all the twinkly lights.
Yeah.
And it just happened that all the twinkly lights I could see ahead of me were red and blue. And I said to the guy beside me, if you didn't know this was a run, you might think it was some kind of police incident. There was nothing untoward. Okay. Didn't meet any adders or anything else like that.
Okay. And I think you spoke about maybe having a bat detector on your...
I had my little audio moth strapped onto my backpack. I haven't looked at the recordings yet, because I haven't been back home yet, and I need to look at these on the PC, but I saw loads of bats, so I'm really excited to see what species I picked up. Because, you know, for everyone you see, there's probably about 10 that you haven't spotted. I did consider running along with a heterodyne detector, you know, so I could actually hear the bat sounds as I was running. But I suspect that would have been a real trip hazard, because, you know what it's like, you hear a bat and it's like, fall.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's also good to be able to just hear what's going around about you anyway.
Yeah.
I think we touched upon that a couple of weeks ago as well. So, Yeah, you would have never finished and just stopped every time you heard a bat, especially if you heard especially if you heard something that wasn't a pip, like if you
heard that, something I'm not used to hearing.
So that's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. So I have just checked the Donate Now page, and I think as things currently stand this morning, I think you are sitting at about 2,400 plus about maybe about 500-ish in gift aid. So this morning, folks, Battability has doubled our planned donation that we were going to give to Anne, and we have already we have already donated £200 this very morning.
Oh, thank you. That's brilliant. That's absolutely fantastic.
Well, you know, Anne, you've done an awful lot for me personally in the past. We've known each other for a long time. I've got a massive amount of affection towards the Bats Without Borders project as well. So yeah, it's the least we could do is, you know, double what we would normally give in these situations. And that's a lot easier than me going out and actually doing the ultramarathon myself, okay? So.
Oh, I bet you could do it though, Neil, really.
No. I'm just going to stick to flat roads, 5 miles, that sort of thing, Okay. So. If that was that darn easy, I'm not suggesting it was easy, but you yourself suggested, I think you used the words, no problem.
Yeah.
And you've had about a week now to get over the, did I really do that? The thing that you might have said at the end, like, I am never doing anything like this ever again. You've had a week and a while, 5-6 days to reflect. Are you going to continue along this triathlon, ultramarathon, whatever you want to call it, journey?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. I've got another event in November. That's a half marathon. Okay. But it's a hilly one in the hills in Woolwich, which I have done once before. Okay. So now my goal is to do it a lot faster than I did it the first time.
Okay.
And I don't know about what I'm going to do bigger than my St Cuthbert's Way. There is the chance to go all the way to Lindisfarne next year.
So that's to do that. Yes, that's to continue where you stopped.
I decided. That I would, the first ultramarathon I would do, I would, you know, aim. Not for the very, very longest. 45 miles seemed a big enough jump up from 26. Yeah. But it happens to be, I've got this thing about the number 64. I think the number 64 is really beautiful for some reason. It's my favourite number. Well, it's, you know, it's rounded. The 6 and the 4s are even numbers and they add up to 10 and it's 8 squared and I don't know. Anyway, 64 is my favourite.
You've had too much time in your hands. Okay, anyway, so 64. Yeah.
That the St Cuthbert's full distance one is 64 and a half miles. I'm thinking, maybe it's meant to be. The only thing is it takes up such a lot of time, the actual training.
Yeah.
And that's just all running. And I'm quite keen to get back to doing more swimming and cycling, because I feel that at this age, you know, I want to kind of even up the wear on my body and my joints. So to do a mixture is probably healthier than doing the long run. So it's there in the back of my mind.
So definitely no other than the November event, no firm goal.
No,
like, I haven't. As yet, but a goal to have a goal, something like that.
Eventually.
Yeah.
When I started doing my training for my marathon for BCT, I remember reading a book and it said you should have 3 goals.
Okay.
You should have one that's, you know, really quite achievable within the foreseeable future. So a bit, just something a bit bigger than what you're doing. You should have a bigger one, you know, which at the point that time, that was my marathon. And then you should have an absolutely ridiculous pie in the sky one. I thought, I'd love to do an Ironman. So that's my pie in the sky, but working towards it.
Absolutely. So just for those people that don't know, and to be fair, I can't instantly remember what's involved in an Ironman. What does that involve? Roughly in terms of distances, times, whatever?
Oh, I'm not sure about times, and I'm not that up to date with it. I think it's 2.5 mile swim,
okay,
followed by 100 mile cycle. But don't quote me on that. Followed by running a marathon.
Wow, and that would all be immediately all in, back to back, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Oh wow. And can you do that in the UK? I mean, I'm assuming you
can. Oh yes, yes, yeah. Yeah. I think though a lot of them happen abroad so that you've got more reliable weather. But yeah. Anyway, that's my eventual peak of a goal. I'm not sure that I'll be fit enough to do one next year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm kind of thinking the running bit is, assuming there's no time constraint, that bit, it would be harder to do something that's harder than what you've already done in that respect, perhaps. Yeah. I think the thing that would the thing that would put me off most, or the thing that I would probably find the biggest challenge would be the 2.5 mile swim, because that's going to be in open water.
Yes.
And I mean, I can, 100 mile cycle, that's going to be painful. That's going to be really painful. But
yeah, the swim could be hard if you've got.
Yeah, the swim, I think, would be the thing that would be, because you're kind of out of your normal environment. So
I thought you were going to say you're out of your depth.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So what's the furthest you've swam open water? Do you know? Have you measured that?
Yeah, actually, I do know.
Okay.
It's probably 3 miles.
Okay, right, okay.
I did have a little break, you know. I did my 1.5 miles up the coast, had a little break, ate some jelly beans, and then gently swam back, and then went to bed for the rest of the day.
And that was in sea, so that wasn't in a...
Yeah, that was in Rosmarkie, just where I live.
Okay, right. So, and I would imagine that's even tougher than doing it in a lake or a loch, yeah? Because you've got...
I don't know, because I think in a big lake you can still get currents and you can still get quite a choppy surface, so
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
And I have to say that was probably, would it be at least a year ago, so I don't think, I'm not as swimming fit as I was then.
Yeah. But you've got an overall level of fitness.
Yeah.
That's still going to be, that's definitely going to be there.
Neil, I'm just thinking, well, I'm sure I could cycle 100 miles. I think I can do all these things separately.
Yeah. But it's then, each one on their own is massive, but then doing them all
together. Yeah.
And do they have do they call it Iron Man, irrespective of whether you're male or female, or do they have an Iron Woman?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, goodness. Yes, well, you know something, go for it. You know, I know it's going to take a couple of years, but you should go for it. And
you'll keep me out of mischief, won't it?
Yeah, and you know, it keeps you. It keeps you young, and it keeps, fitness is so, so important. As you know, I pay a lot of attention to my fitness, but not to the level that you go.
One of the things that I reckon that this was so kind of easy is I did it very, very gently and very gradually.
Yeah.
I'm not one of these people who believes in, if there's no pain, there's no gain. I don't want any pain at all. I just want to just gently build up. And I think that really stood me in good stead.
Yeah. And I think a lot of mistakes, and I've found this myself when I've ran shorter distances, when it's an organized event, like a half marathon or a 10K or a 5K, and you're there at the start line with hundreds, sometimes thousands of other people, there is this tendency to get caught up in the excitement,
I suppose. Excitement and the buzz,
and start off too fast, or you see hundreds of people kind of sprinting away from you.
And you feel a panic, thinking, I'm going to be left behind.
Yeah, I don't want to be last, sort of thing, you know. And And I haven't done one since before COVID, but even the park runs, you know, the 5K park runs, yeah, which I've done quite a few of, you know, once you've done a couple, you kind of know that a fair percentage of these people that have sprinted off in front of you, by the time you get to the end of a 3 mile run, you've passed a good percentage of them. just by
being slow and steady. I'm really pleased with myself in how calm I managed to stay, but it's interesting, you know, how towards the end of your training you do a taper and you run less and you rest more. That's often a time when paranoia hits people, this paranoid feeling of I haven't done enough.
And they want to do more.
That sort of last minute panic. Yeah. And I think that's partly because it's perhaps just a natural thing that you start to doubt yourself, but also you're not doing the running, which gives you the lovely feel good chemicals that help you feel calm. So that becomes a vicious circle. Well, I was feeling quite calm in the taper phase. I started writing a blog just explaining what paranoia is, and just writing the words anxiety and fear just started me feeling afraid. It's really stupid. But it's just writing the word. I haven't even said the word. And just that association as having a chemical effect on my body. So then I had to sit there and think, calm, happy, strong. Yeah. I'm calm. And I just sort of chanted that to myself all the last few weeks. Also right at the beginning on the bus, it was quite interesting. There were people who were obviously quite nervous and who had to chat to their friends about what they'd been doing. And there were other people who I was really in awe of who just sat there on the bus sort of dozing. And I thought, that's what you should do. You should just be absolutely chilled out. Yeah. So at the start, I deliberately waited right till the end, partly because I didn't want to hold people up, but partly because I thought I don't want to get caught up in that excitement.
And how many people were doing it in total, do you know, roughly?
There was a limit of 300, but I don't think there was many as that. I did actually add it all up, but I've forgotten now. I think there were about 200 doing both distances.
Okay.
There were about 20 people dropped out during the run.
That's probably okay. I suppose with that sort of thing, anybody could get an unfortunate injury, no matter how well they're prepared. But I would imagine a lot of those people, they either haven't trained properly or they've panicked at the start and gone too fast. Or they're just not in the right frame of mind.
I think some people had probably entered to do the longer distance, but knowing in the back of their minds that they might stop at the shorter distance and probably but there was one poor guy had looked at the route and he decided to wear road shoes rather than trail shoes, and his poor feet were so blistered. How he hobbled into Wooler, I don't know.
It's a totally different compared to road running. I've only ever done, and it was a very small event, it was only like 2-3 miles, I think. It was a long time ago. What I would call a hill run once. And to be honest, I didn't enjoy it. I just didn't enjoy it. There are these people that, especially going downhill, they just take off at a rate of knots on scree and heather. I just can't do that. I'm just so scared that I'm going to, you know, fall, you know. But the speed some of those people go, especially on the downhill portions, I'm just like, no, that's never going to be me. Even if I was fit enough to do it, I just... I always use the excuse that my head is, because I'm a tall guy, my head is too far away from my feet.
I'm sure there's something in that as well, that your actual, you know, your physique and everything will make a difference. Do you want to see my medals?
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
So this is my da, 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 da. That's right. My finisher's medal.
Okay.
And then this is my special for coming first in my age category for the women who were over 60.
Wow. Okay.
So I was first in the over 60s women to finish the from Melrose to Willoughby. But I have to add, I was the only woman in that age category. So.
But hey, you still deserve it because all of these other people didn't think they could do it.
So. Well, I sort of think, well, I was the only one. So even if I finished, you know, all I had to do was finish to be first. Yeah. I was also going to be last. But then I think, oh, well, I'm quite proud. I was actually the oldest woman taking part.
Yeah.
So that's my medal for being an old, creaky old bat.
Absolutely. That's absolutely brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. Well, you know, thanks for coming back. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, it's been absolutely amazing hearing all about it. And yeah, so there you go. Anne Youngman, ultra marathon runner in 2023, raising funds for Bats Without Borders. We have been absolutely delighted to be a very small part of this process and also put forward our own donation. And obviously, you're going to be listening to this at some point in the future. In other words, you know, the event is now finished. But my understanding is the fundraising for Bats donation page, Creaky Old Bat Goes Ultra, is still going to be live for a good period of time after the event. So please, even if you just give a small amount to support Anne, and to contribute towards the valuable work that Bats Without Borders does or do. I'm never quite sure how to finish that sentence, but you get what I mean, folks. You know, even if it's just £5 or £10 or anything, Anne and the wonderful people at Bats Without Borders will be hugely appreciative. Anne, is there anything that you want to say to just close things off? Is there anything I haven't said already or that you want to reiterate? Thank you.
Oh, I just want to say a huge thank you for all the donations we've had already and any more that we get. It really does help because you feel like all these people are sort of wishing you well. So it was great. Brilliant. So yeah, just thank you everyone and watch this space for the next adventure of what the creaky old bat did next.
And if bat ability is still around, which I very much anticipate it will be, okay, so that's that hidden message there, folks. If we're still around and we're still doing Talking Bats, and we'll be delighted to have you back and catch up on the next journey that you undertake.
Thanks very much, Neil.
No problem at all. So, folks, we're going to close things off there. So, Anne, if you just say goodbye to our Talking Bat audience, I'll stop the recording. Yeah.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this Talking Bat interview, which is an edited, audio-only version of the original video session. The full version, including video, is available via Bitability Club, our online training platform. To find out more about Club, go to bitability.co.uk. Till next time, thank you.